I started gambling when I was 13 years old, and I was actually in my first Gamblers Anonymous meeting by the time I was 16. Gambling, drinking, partying, living life above my means, and every day became a blur. You lie, you're stealing, you're manipulating, you're waking up to live to gamble and kind of gamble to live. And it's going to get worse. I mean, this is like the beginning of an opioid crisis.
Today's guest is Rob Sackowitz, owner of Right Choice Recovery, and he shares his story of gambling addiction, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and of course, his recovery of all three. But before we dive into his story, I have just one favor to ask from you. There's so many of you that watch this channel regularly, but you haven't yet hit that subscribe button. If you would do me the favor of subscribing to the channel, which is the number one way you can support us here, my promise to you is that I continue to work hard each and every day to spread the message that gambling addiction is real. Rob, welcome back to the channel. You've been on to share your story of not only recovery from a gambling addiction, but also recovery from substances. For those that haven't seen your previous interview, why don't we give them some context? What is it that you do now in recovery?
Well, we opened up a beautiful, state-of-the-art, family-owned and operated treatment center in September of 2022. It's called Right Choice Recovery. We're conveniently located right here in central New Jersey, and we offer several levels of care, and we have a gambling curriculum that is pretty special. It's nationwide, and we're helping a lot of people recover, not just from gambling, but for substance abuse and mental health as well.
Absolutely. And everyone that I've talked to that has come through Right Choice has only had positive things to say, which is the main motivation of us talking today. We're going to hear more about your program, but before we get into that, gambling treatment is so rare. Like, not a lot of places offer it. Tell us about your experience with gambling. Why is it so important to you that you're not only offering people with substance use disorders help, but also those struggling with gambling?
Well, gambling was my primary addiction. So I started gambling when I was 13 years old, and I was actually in my first Gamblers Anonymous meeting by the time I was 16. So it's very near and dear to my heart. For a while, when I abstained and not really got into recovery, I just kind of took the mental aspect of it and said, you know what, I could do anything in this world but gamble. And that led to me crossing into substance abuse and also alcoholism. So for me, I felt there was a need out there for a really good gambling curriculum where we get down to causes and conditions. We go over the resentments and your fear, how to take your inventory, how to take your accountability, you know, and really give them all the opportunities and tools that they need to truly recover from a compulsive gambling disorder.
So you said you went to your first meeting when you were 16 years old. Is that when you stopped gambling, or tell us what's your gambling story following that?
It was a long road, Rob. It started at 13, very innocently, with my dad at the racetrack, and it was a great day. Then it turned into, you know, betting on sports and hanging out with kids at school, and the football tickets and lottery tickets and parlays and owing kids money at school. Mm-hmm. So that led to my first Gamblers Anonymous meeting, some of the consequences I was facing. And then from then, I just continued to chase all my losses. Mm-hmm. And that went on for another 19 years. I didn't stop gambling till I was 35 years old.
Wow. So when you went into that first meeting, were you going in for yourself? Did you already know that you had a problem with it back then, or did someone ask you to go to a meeting?
I kind of knew I had a problem, but I did it to, you know, kind of make my parents happy. I didn't go there to like quit gambling. You know, you're 16. It's hard to think that you could live the rest of your life without placing another bet.
When your gambling began to pick up, you know, were you gambling with bookies? Were you like, what was your gambling experience like?
It's progressive in nature, so it always gets worse. It never gets better. So it starts out with, you know, bookies and sports, and then it goes to casinos, then it goes to lotteries, then it goes to, you know, borrowing and fantasy sports and on the golf course and anything you could do to get that rush, you know, that high, that natural, you know, dopamine hit that we get from placing a bet. And you start to owe so much money, and you also line so much that you have to continually keep that cycle going, because in your brain, that's the only way out. And of course, it did lead to some pretty terrible consequences. I've gotten kicked out of the military for financial irresponsibility and underage drinking. I was arrested 9 times. You know, we ran Ponzi schemes. I was charged with theft by deception, and, you know, all of it referred, you know, would bring back towards you know, just the gambling, the money, the borrowing, the lying, the manipulating. So it was bad.
What made you join the military, and kind of how did that whole situation play out?
I was 18, 19 years old, and I failed out of college. I was, you know, going to Brookdale Community College and just would never show up, go to classes. And I was working for my dad in a family-owned shoe store at the time, and my grandfather. And I didn't really have that many friends because most of them went to school, and I was out there ripping and roaring, gambling, drinking, you know, kind of doing what young adults do. And I needed a little direction, and I decided to join the Air Force. It was pretty good in the beginning because, you know, you go to basic training, and I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, I didn't gamble. I got in really great shape. Then I went to tech school. That was in Mississippi. And I came home, and then I found out my primary base where I was going to be stationed was in Barksdale Air Force Base, Shreveport, Louisiana. And as you know or may not know, there's river boats everywhere there. And there's also two racetracks there. And they have Mardi Gras there. You know, for a guy that always talks about people, places, and things and triggers, if you're not spiritually fit and you're 20 years old and thrown into Louisiana, that's a tough place to recover if you are white-knuckling it and only living in abstinence. So it didn't take very long for me to, you know, run parties, started betting illegally and kind of like running a little gambling ring with captains and colonels and sergeants and Air Force men. Eventually, I got pinched because they started winning and I couldn't pay them. And that's how I got charged with two Article 15s. One for underage drinking, they caught me, and two for financial irresponsibility.
Wow. So you were running like a sports book then?
Pretty much. I would take their action and, you know, certain things I would call in and certain things I'd keep myself. And I had about 8 or 9 guys betting with me, and I did really well for a while until some of them started winning big and I couldn't pay them.
So following the Article 15s, you get sent back home?
To New Jersey.
To New Jersey. And then kind of what happens? Pick up your story from there.
Totally gambling, drinking, partying, living life above my means. And every day became a blur. It was, you know, Monday goes into Tuesday, goes into Wednesday. There's nothing really to look forward to because you're stuck in that box. And in that box, you lie, you're stealing, you know, you're manipulating. You know, it's kind of a shallow life. You're waking up to live to gamble and kind of gamble to live.
So when does the gambling reach a point that you're willing to say, okay, I want to actually stop? Or do you ever reach a point where you wanted to stop? Like, what kind of happened?
I kind of had a couple of days that were, you know, my abstinence day. Like, November 5th, 2000, for me, was a day that I stopped gambling for, you know, a period of time. But, you know, it was a vicious cycle where, you know, I just couldn't abstain. As you know, when you just stop, you're still left with that restless, irritable discontent. You have that FOMO, like you feel like you're missing out. And what we're taught in recovery is the true acceptance piece, that there are no reservations. There could be Super Bowl after Super Bowl and championship and Tuesday night game and all-stars and poker and blackjack. There's no winning for me. And that was like the turning point. I did it all, Rob. I tried the lottery. I tried the keno. I tried the casinos, the blackjack. I've even had the exotic stuff with high lie and dog tracks and racetracks and derbies. And when you get to a point where you're in that much pain and you realize that you don't need gambling to live. You need your arms, your legs. You know, you need to eat. You need a drink. Like, you don't, it doesn't impact your day-to-day life.
Struggling with an addiction can make you feel like you're all alone. But trust me, it doesn't have to be that way. At Right Choice Recovery, a family-owned and operated treatment center in New Jersey, we are here for you, and we're dedicated to helping you break free from addiction and change your life for the better. Whether you're struggling with substances or a gambling addiction, this is the spot for you. With personalized care, real support, and a team that understands exactly what you're going through, we're here to walk with you on your journey to recovery, because recovery is possible. And it all starts with the right choice. Check the description of this video today for more information. So you had this epiphany in rehab that you didn't need to gamble to live. There was plenty of other things you could do, that there was a life outside of gambling, drinking, doing drugs. How did you get into rehab, though? What had happened that kind of drew the line in the sand for you?
I was going to an IOP program in Freehold, And I failed out of it miserably for, you know, drinking and doing drugs and still gambling and lying. You know, I wrote up on, you know, with my counselor on contract that, you know, if I were to relapse again, I would go away to treatment. I got kicked out. He said, I can't have you here. I'm making a recommendation for you to go to residential. Mm. And they sent a letter to the house. Mm. And of course, you know, as a good gambler, we go, I paid a mailman every day, you know. I want to be the guy to get the mail. And the one day I didn't get him, my wife got the mail. And it said that I was discharged. Mm. So I had to explain to her, you know, what was going on. And she was leaving. Or, you know, get help or I'm leaving. You know, that was her kind of ultimatum that she made to me. And my dad was kicking me pretty much out of the family business and said, like, get help, don't get help. Like, I can't go on like this. You're killing me. I kind of took a look at my life, and I used the saying a lot. I know what was going to happen if I continued to gamble, but I didn't know what was going to happen if I actually stopped. Yeah. And that was the whole mystery. That was the fear that always held me back. Like, I don't know how to live life without drinking, gambling, and doing drugs, and I didn't know what it was going to look like.
But you did find a life without those things. What's your life like today?
I feel like I'm dreaming. You just give me goosebumps. Like, I don't know. We're sitting in this conference room that this was my vision, you know, and yeah, I have a great team and a lot of people behind me, but I wanted it to feel like this, Rob. I wanted it to be warm and inviting and comfortable and soothing. And I don't know how I got here. You know, I'm a guy that was desperate, hopeless, helpless. And today I have a life beyond my wildest imagination, and I get to give back and sit with the clients and ask them how they're doing and what step are they on and do they have a sponsor and how that court case might have panned out or how their relationship is with their wife. My life has so much more meaning and so much more purpose that I feel full. You know, it's great to have nice things from a material side, and it feels good, but we're really is the best part about it is that I don't have to look over my shoulders. I don't have any secrets. I could be me. I'm finally secure in my own skin.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I don't have challenges and that I still have stuff that I gotta work on and character defects. But the day to day, I feel finally like a person that's not only been through it and that has the experience and the wisdom to know the difference, but to know that if I could do it, you know, so can all those people out there that are still struggling.
Yeah. And I imagine that it's a great feeling to see people reaching the point where they're graduating the program, where they're getting back to their lives following their time here. You know, what's that feeling like when you see someone come in at their lowest and then, you know, X number of weeks later, they're heading out and they're a changed person? What does that feel like for you?
It's so gratifying. And we have a couple of them that are graduating and leaving, and I could not be just more proud. And, you know, it's not just I'm proud of them. I'm proud of my staff. I'm proud of the curriculum. I'm proud of all the tools and resources that we gave them, because I know it's a lot of work and how hard it actually is. And I'm excited for them also.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, this is not to hold them back. This is to build them back up and then let them go. It's almost like, you know, watching a bird kind of get into that nest and stay there and start to learn how to fly. And then one day he just gets up and flies away. It's special because it's not about, you know, the money, so to speak, or, you know, insurances. It's about meeting them where they're at, seeing how bad they are, and then seeing that aha moment also, that transformation, and then watching them go do good. Yeah. You know, that it's pretty special.
We've seen a rise in the number of people gambling and thus the number of people getting addicted to gambling. You went through your addiction, the majority of the negatives, before gambling went online. You know, what are the key differences between a gambling problem 20 years ago versus a gambling problem today?
Well, you said it. It's all online. It's on your phone. I mean, it's so accessible everywhere. And every commercial is FanDuel and DraftKings and BetMGM. So it's that constant noise that you have to deal with as a distraction. 20 years ago, it's like you needed a bookie, you needed to find a place offshore, you needed a credit card or a Western Union and a MoneyGram. Nowadays, it's so accessible. And it's going to get worse. I mean, this is like the beginning of an opioid crisis, you know, way back when, where the pharmacists and the chiropractors were just writing scripts if you had a, you know, back injury, a leg injury, a neck injury. The only difference is those pharmaceutical companies were kind of giving some of those doctors kickbacks. Here, it's all just casinos that are getting these people's money. And the consequences are great. I mean, we have clients day in and day out that are coming, that are telling me horror stories, Rob. It's not just they owe 20 grand on a credit card. It's, you know, they're getting divorced, or, you know, they borrowed from Peter to pay Paul and, you know, went to great depths to continue to gamble because they felt that was the only way out for them.
I think Hollywood's given us like this archetype of a gambling addict. It's the guy in Uncut Gems who runs the pawn shop, the jewelry store, and he's going into the back room and breaking legs and he's getting his leg broken, these kinds of things, right? Bookies. What is the modern day archetype of a gambling addict in America?
I think he's probably 26 years old, wears like skinny jeans or like a hipster kind of guy, or, you know, he's a younger looking guy. We're all smart people. You know, we're all obsessive compulsive. We have that, most of us, that type A gene in us. And if it's used for a good purpose, we could do some great things. However, it's that, you know, ADHD, hyper-focused on certain things. And he's gambling on his phone all day long. He's on Instagram, Snapchat, you know, Facebook, all these TikTok, all these different, you know, social media outlets. And he'll be in a room full of other kids and yet still be on his phone. It's no more, you know, in the back breaking legs and Louie and, you know, in the streets of New York and, you know, Italian, so to speak. It's it's across America everywhere. And they come from all walks of life.
Yeah.
I mean, we have people that flew in from Arizona and Texas and Florida to come here special for treatment, you know, to recover from a gambling problem.
Yeah. And they tend to be younger people.
Absolutely. They're 25 to 30 right now is the majority of what we got.
Where are we heading? What's the future of gambling and gambling addiction looking like in America, call it 2030?
Unless there's a major, major shift in education in the high schools and in colleges, which I think it's beginning to happen, but it's got to be progressive as far as, you know, what's out there. Because a lot of people still think there's a stigma about it, still afraid to talk about it. And when you're going through it, you need to know that you're not alone. And they did a lot of that years ago, if you remember, with the tobacco commercials. They did a lot about buzz driving as drunk driving with the alcohol commercials. They're going to need to do more with the gambling. Not just run an ad for BetMGM and get your $100 bonus and then at the very end say you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. They're going to need to show some consequences of what happens, because otherwise Gamblers Anonymous meetings are going to continue to pop up. There's going to be continuous psychologists and therapists that are going to embrace this as an opportunity to try to help people and make money. That's my biggest concern. You know, I'm doing this for the right reasons. I genuinely care. To anybody watching this, if they have a problem, I want them to call me. We're the leader here, Rob. We're the originator. There's no other facility out here that does what we do. You know, we have a full blown gambling curriculum that will help clients go through the process to change the way they think, to change the way they act, and then change the way they react so they can combat this addiction. It's a disease. So we got to get them the right help, because like we always talk about, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So we're here to help them.
I do feel like we're probably on the edge of like a pseudo gold rush, so to speak, when it comes to gambling help, quote unquote, gambling treatment across the board. I see it on like socials, right? Like people are popping up with new like apps that are just half-assed thrown together. They're trying to push them out really quick and using really cheesy types of TikToks that are kind of trendy to kind of get people in. It's becoming a trending topic is what it is. But I do fear for the initial wave of help that's going to come with people who don't have the right intentions. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that one. If your addiction were to be playing out today, so, you know, you started your gambling yesterday, how do you think it would have changed your story?
I could get emotional about that question because I'd be dead. Not if I started yesterday.
Wow.
But if it was a couple years ago, or I'd be dead.
Wow.
Because the desperate feeling I had when I stopped. I was barely able to stop at that point. And with the drugs that I was doing and the drinking that I was doing, and now with fentanyl in the mix, I am 100% convinced that I would be dead.
So that's a big alarm, a big red flag that people should be seeking out help even sooner.
If you're going through it, you need to ask for help. It's okay. Give it a chance. You know, if it's not for you, at least you'll know you put forth an effort. Yeah. Or if you never really did, you know, ask for something without knowing what's going to happen, you don't know what you're missing or what you're not missing. It's like I told you earlier, I knew what was going to happen if I kept gambling, but I didn't know how good my life could actually get not gambling. And amazing things happen. You know, you go to make an amends to somebody and they forgive you. Or you go to pay a bookie for a while that you owe money to, and then he says, you know, my son's a drug addict, I'll forgive the debt, you know, take him to meetings.
Did that actually happen?
Yeah.
Well, tell me about that story. You owed someone money and then you helped
him? It wasn't somebody. It was a pretty rough guy. He was a bookie, actually. At one point, he put a gun to my head.
Wow.
And about 4 years into it, he said, are you still going to those meetings? I said, yeah. He said, I need your help. Take my son to those NA meetings. Get him sober. I'll forgive the debt. And thank God the kid was clean for, I don't know, about 9 months. Taking him to meetings, and then he moved away, but he forgave the debt.
Wow.
You know, you have a kid in recovery. You know, your wife begins to trust you again. She doesn't ask to see the credit card every day. You don't have to look over your shoulder. And then one of the greatest gifts you get in recovery is somebody comes up to you and they say, would you be my sponsor? Because now you have something that they want. And then that's when your life really has a lot of purpose in it.
So finding purpose in your recovery has helped you to stay away?
Absolutely. And it helps with my accountability. How could I preach something that I don't practice myself? And then how can I act clean and live dirty? The guilt would eat me alive. So it holds me to a certain accountability. And I want to be better. You know, I'm not telling you I'm perfect. I still have plenty of character defects. But it makes me want to do better, and I'm aware of them now. And I can still take my inventory. I'm harder on myself today than I've ever been, because what was acceptable 12 years ago is not acceptable for me now.
Thank you, Rob, once again for coming on and sharing your story. To anyone that wants to hear another story of someone in recovery from a gambling addiction, check out this video next. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.